We are back here with the conversation, and as we've been hearing, Hurricane Lane continues to take its toll on the Big Island and Maui with heavy rain and winds. HPR's news director Bill Dorman here with the latest update from the National Weather Service.
Just a little bit from the Central Pacific Hurricane Center on this. That hurricane watch that was in effect for Kauai is now a tropical storm watch for Kauai and Niihau, so just a bit of a downgrade on that. Tropical storm warning remaining in effect for Hawaii County and hurricane warning for Oahu and for Maui County as well. Just a couple of other quick highlights on that. Tropical storm conditions already occurring in Big Island, Maui County, and Oahu. Hurricane conditions expected over portions of Maui County and Oahu starting tonight. National Weather Service says tropical storm conditions possible on Kauai starting on Saturday. And just a couple of other points around the islands. The health department has issued a statewide brown water advisory, not shocking because of the floods and the rains that we have seen all around the islands and the stormwater runoff there. The brush fires on Maui, again, about 100 people evacuated near Lahaina, about 300 acres involved there. Power outages sporadically around the state, different islands, more than 13,000 right now. HECO and HELCO working on what they can. About 4,500, I believe, on the Big Island was the latest, and about 6,000 on Maui, a few hundred on Oahu. And finally, flights on Maui, more cancellations today. Flights in and out of Maui largely canceled. Expectations right now are that normal operations to resume Saturday as long as there's no damage to Kahului Airport. And again, advice for, there have been some disruptions out of Honolulu. Advice for would-be travelers and travelers planning is to check with your individual airlines and to do so before showing up at any airport.
Right, and we do have word that there will be a noon briefing at the Diamond Head Emergency Operating Center where we will have representatives of the airlines as well as the governor and the mayor. And
shipping companies.
Shipping companies
as well,
companies as yes. Well, Hawaiian Electric and Hawaiian Telecom, I believe. But joining us this morning, we've got the two mayors from the Big Island and from Maui. Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us. Maybe, Mayor Kim, if we could start out with you. What's the latest on your island? Hello, Mayor, are you there? How about Mayor Arakawa?
Mr. Arakawa, I'm here.
How are you? What's happening on your island? You've got the fires going. I heard it just started to rain in some of the parts of the island. What's the latest?
We've been watching Mayor Kim's Big Island, a lot of the rain damage and the wind and surf. So we're watching them carefully. We expect that as soon as it leaves the Big Island, it'll be hitting Maui. So we've been getting intermittent heavy rains in different parts of the island, and we've been picking up 40 to 48 mile an hour wind in some of our parts of our island. We also had a little bit of a glitch last night, in that we had a fire start at Maalaea that we had to put out. We also had a fire this morning at about 1 o'clock that started up in Lahaina, at the entrance of Lahaina. That forced us to close Honopiliwani Highway, which is the only roadway into Lahaina. This morning at around, I think, somewhere around 8 o'clock or so, we also had a second fire in Lahaina area above the Civic Center. So we had to evacuate the area of Pu'umana residents, about 100 residents. Lanipoko, we started to evacuate Lanipoko, which was probably another 100 residents. Since then, the fires have been contained so that we believe that we'll be able to handle it. The biggest problem we had was that we could not use helicopter airdrops for water because of the high winds that are in that area. So we've mobilized about 10 battalions out to the area with almost all of the major fire trucks and tankers that we could muster to that area without endangering the rest of the community. So they're all out there fighting the blaze right now. We've been in contact with the governor's office and with National Guard, and they are sending us some assistance. We had concerns with the evacuees because we're also at the same time worrying about what's going to happen with Hurricane Lane. So having to deal with the double whammy, so to speak, we're almost trying to catch up with Mayor Kim on the Big Island, who's dealing with volcanoes as well as flooding. It's been a very, very busy morning at best.
Well, Mayor Arakawa, do we have a handle yet on how that fire may have started? Was it a transformer, a down line? Do we know?
We're not sure what it is yet. We suspect it's probably a down electric line, but it's in three different locations that we've had fires. So Malaya, Lanipoco, as well as above our civic center. So three different fires. So we suspect that it's probably a downed electrical line because of the high winds. But we're not sure.
Okay, and I do believe we have Mayor Harry Kim back on the line.
Yes.
How is your island faring? You've had lots of rain, and we've just been just amazed at the pictures that we've been seeing on television about with the swollen rivers, and oh, my gosh, amazing.
Yeah, well, we're in the midst of responding now. Various things I'll give you. Unfortunately, we do have some homes that are varying degrees of damage from flooding. We are still trying to mitigate the causes for it, and a lot of times, you know, it is a plug culverts and overflows and those things that sometimes, you know, if you get it in time, you can prevent a lot of damage. Unfortunately, at this time, we have reports of several homes that have been, like I said, damaged to varying degrees, all in a Hilo proper area. There's other isolated kind of things that are happening and hopefully don't get worse, like fire department and dock areas right now responding to a boat that broke its mooring somewhere in North Kohala, Kauai area, and I guess hung itself up on a breakwater there. Those are all the different kind of things that are happening and continue to happen. You know, what, we got 30 inches of rain plus, you know, in the past 36 hours or so, and that's a heck of a lot of rain, obviously. And listening to the governor, mayor from Maui, I was thinking how ironic, you know, he makes a comparison of rain, wind, and fire without using those words, but that's for him to have to respond to that to me is really odd at this time because I am drowning in water because of the number of rainfall per inches in the past day and a half or so. So I wish the mayor well.
And, you know, Mayor, I have been listening to the coverage since yesterday, and I know you make the point that just because something hasn't happened before in previous storms, it doesn't mean that it's not going to happen with this one. I think you talked about Saddle Road.
Yeah, you know, that's us as mankind. You know, we, like, Saddle Road is a multi-million-dollar road, and, you know, it's a well-planned road, and we were, just to keep things light, not to criticize, but you know, made a crack of, well, I guess you planned for 22 inches and 23 inches came down. You know, those are bad jokes at this time, but, you know, in reality speaks, I don't care how well you plan sometimes, things do happen. This is a phenomena. I heard all of discussion this morning and yesterday on the speed of the hurricane, direction, intensity, et cetera, and those are mankind words. What is happening is we are having a huge storm that is doing things that I don't think anybody in Hawaii has ever seen, including the meteorologists. Here came this Hurricane Lane, and it was projected to go here. It is not. It was projected to go there at a certain time. It does not. It was projected because the intensity of the storm, and it has deviated from that. Our job is to get the best information we can, just like Mayor Arakawa and anybody else, and try to mitigate the harm and count on people to, you know, realize that there's only so much information we can get, and the rest is up to us to just be on alert. And this is not over, far from it for us and Maui and everybody else, because we still don't know what will happen. And I'll take this opportunity to say you know, we've got to stay on alert and be on alert because we don't know what's going to happen, and we got to mitigate as best as we can. We've already, like I said, that at least, you know, several homes all have been damaged to varying degrees, and you know, those owners will have to hope for the best on that. You know, right now I'm mentally down because automatically I know some of them will not have flood insurance, and that's the kind of things that you find out, and these things, people will be a whole lifestyle change, just like the 700 homes we had on the you know, lava flow.
Yeah, it's amazing, and it's kind of scary for us here on Oahu watching what you have gone through and what Maui's going through, because we just know we're next. We appreciate your time, Mayor Kim and Mayor Arakawa. Keep safe.
Take care. Bye-bye.
We will continue the conversation right after a break.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, whose contributors help Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to the St. Andrews Schools, which includes the Priory School for Girls, the Prep for Boys, and Queen Emma Preschool.
On the next Fresh Air, we hear from the star of the film The Rider, which is now streaming and on DVD. Brady Jandrew plays a slightly fictionalized version of himself, a young Native American rodeo rider who's told, after a serious head injury, that he has to give up riding, rodeo, and training horses, the only life he knows. Join us.
This afternoon at 3.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us this morning are Mufi Hanneman, president of the Hawaii Lodging and Tourism Association, and former Honolulu mayor, Dennis Wong. He's a Sea Grant specialist and wrote the Homeowner's Handbook to Prepare for Natural Hazards. And Francine Wai is the executive director of the Disability and Communications Access Board. And this morning, we've got a little unusual situation in that all our guests are joining us via phone because of the potential hazards of being out and about during this time. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Hello.
Catherine, great to be with you.
And Mufi, maybe as former mayor, you know the tremendous effort behind what needs to be done to keep our residents and the visitors of our city safe. Let's start with you. You probably heard Mayor Arakawa and Mayor Kim talk about what's happening at this moment with Hurricane Lane.
Well, Catherine, I've always said the most important responsibility of a county mayor is public safety, and certainly now we're seeing it bear fruit here in terms of the examples that all these mayors are going through. I feel for them, and it's a very difficult job, but, you know, these are two seasoned mayors, both Mayor Arakawa and especially Mayor Kim, who ran civil defense. So their constituents should feel very confident in their ability to bring everyone together. We're getting excellent cooperation from Governor Ige. The feds are kicking in big time. But at the end of the day, people who live on that island, whether it's here on Oahu with Mayor Caldwell or on Kauai also with Mayor Cavallo, they want to know where their mayor stands, what their mayor is doing to ensure public safety. And I think right now we're in a situation where, mm-hmm. as much as you prepare, you just don't know what's going to happen, the impact. But the thing is that you need to be prepared, and you also need to know that they all have agencies, have people in their first responders group and the like. This is something that's part of their training. You know, when I was mayor, they used to say it's not a question of if, it's a question of when the next hurricane is going to hit. We've had some near misses through the years, and the last one was 1992 with Iniki. So, you know, you keep hoping and praying for the best results. But at the end of the day, you have to be prepared for all conditions. And whatever that is going to occur, you need to be ready. And you also need to make sure that the people are going to cooperate. You know, we're known throughout the years for our spirit of aloha. And we always seem to rise to the occasion. You know, the resiliency of the people of Hawaii, the compassion that we show for each other. And in my particular job now as the head of the Hawaii Lodging and Tourism Association, it's the visitors that are here. But I also maintain, as I've been saying throughout the last few days, it's not just the visitor safety. I'm also concerned about the safety of our employees. you know, hotels don't shut down. They have to remain open. So our general managers had to be very creative in terms of how we cope with the situation of making sure that the employees can come to work safely, go home safely. So there's been some imaginative and creative thinking because the city had to shut down bus service as of last night at 6 p.m. So they've had those that have rooms at their hotel have been accommodating their employees. Those that went home are carpooling. We're also asking for the kukua of our guests, and many of them have talked to the guests there and sometimes suspending service for a day or saying, look, limited service today. We're only going to give you towels. We're not going to be able to clean up your room and the like. And the visitors, for the most part, have been very, very understanding. So it's a difficult situation, but I always feel we'll get through it.
And, Mufi, I know that at noon today there's going to be a news conference with representatives from the Airlines Committee, I believe, as well as Honolulu Mayor Kirk Caldwell is there. He was your former managing director during your time at the city, you know, as well as the governor and I think folks with FEMA. So really we'll get the latest on what folks need to know out of that new news conference today.
Well, last night, you know, as you had indicated, we're all calling from different places. I'm calling here from the command center, the convention center here, where together with HTA, Hawaii Visitors and Convention Bureau, and HLTA, we're marshaling our resources, sharing our information, and then getting information out on a very timely basis. Last night, we kind of had a mini crisis, if you will, on Maui. 60, 70 people just showed up at the airport and wanted to take a flight out. And there were no flights going out last night, and neither did they have reservations. So we worked with the airport folks there and the airline to ensure that we tried to keep them in a good place because many of them were anxious and so forth. And one of our member properties stepped up, Courtyard Marriott, and took many of them and housed them at the hotel that's near the airport. So we sent out a memo last night together with John Monahan, who's the head of HVCB, and myself, to all our general managers on Maui in particular, and asked them to please try to keep their guests as anxious as they are to get out of Maui last night or early this morning, that to please be understanding about it because there's no flights that are leaving to and from on Maui. So these are the kind of things that you know, you have to do. You have to make these snap judgments, last-minute decisions, and when everybody kukuas, it helps you get through it. And so this press conference today is going to be very good from an airline standpoint on when these flights, they think, are going to resume. Because, as you know, it's hitting Maui now, and then Oahu is slated to get hit tonight in some form or fashion.
And has there been any talk about what happens to the visitors that are in people's homes that are had a book with Airbnb or VRBO or HomeAway? I mean, those folks are not in hotels where you've got staff that can support, you know, their situation.
Well, yeah, you know, and that's always a concern. And that's what we always tell people when you can, when these emergency situations occur, that's when the advantage of staying in a hotel really kicks in. But, you know, we'll try to be as helpful as possible. But I think it's really the counties that have to identify where these places are and then the platforms themselves to kind of be proactive about it, whether it's Airbnb, HomeAway, to steer these people in the right direction, notify the person who owns that particular dwelling and be as helpful as possible because you don't want to say, well, you're on your own and you knew that coming in when you stayed in Airbnb, you're not going to have the safety and security of a lodging property like. When these things happen, it doesn't matter where you're from, where you're staying, you just got to help.
Okay, and Dennis Wong, you put together this homeowner's guide on how to prepare for a natural disaster, and we were talking we're not just the residents but also visitors that might be staying in some of these older homes that you would like to think folks have taken the steps to kind of shore up their structures to withstand a lot of these hurricane-force winds.
Right. Well, it may be a little late for them to, to shore up their structures. We recommend and provide guidance on how to do that for all types of housing, single wall and double wall. And, we usually recommend people do it months in advance or before hurricane season. But the key thing that they need to do is stay proactive, listen to the news. They're not sure where they should go. They should, you know, if they don't know the strength of their structure, and it looks like Lane may be heading north, which is a small possibility, but it is a possibility. They should, you know, listen to TV and radio, and if necessary, they could always use a public emergency shelter.
Right, and the handbook that you put together, I understand that about a month ago you included a new table. Basically, it's a list that you can determine whether you need to shelter in place, and you know what to expect if you're in the middle of the storm like we are.
Yes, it's okay. So it's currently online. So it's called the Shelter in Place Table, and it provides guidance on depending on the type of housing and the strength of the system, primarily wind. Now, everyone's been saying that they should shelter in place, but they cannot shelter in place if there's any risk of flooding. So if you're in a flood zone, or even if you have a history of flooding, and it looks like the hurricane is going to threaten, you should not shelter in place. Also, if their house is not strong enough, we recommend they go to a friend's or relative's house, which is stronger, or go to a high-rise concrete building. But in terms of strength, the factors and variables are how it was originally built. And if you think of the story of like the three little pigs with the straw
right.
house, a wood house, and a concrete house, the three variations for Hawaii are single wall house, double wall house, concrete house. That's how it was originally built. And then it depends on the building code, and it's all online. And we should mention, you know, your listeners know how to get to the website. But they need to generally houses built before 88 don't have hurricane clips. If they're built after 95, they have a continuous load path connection, which ties the roof to the wall. That's for Oahu. The dates vary for each island. So it's a function of the wall, you know, is it single wall, double wall, or concrete? Is it built before 88, between 88 and 95, or after 95? And those dates are going to vary a little for each county. And then the other variable, and there are many actually, but these are the major variables. The other major variable is those strength of the wind. Okay, so now we have Lane. Even with today's forecast from National Weather Service, they have almost like a 70% chance that tropical storm winds will hit Oahu. Okay, but a slight chance, maybe 10% or less, that hurricane force winds will hit Oahu. Listeners need to monitor TV and radio and go to the National Weather Service Honolulu office website. Their current hazards tropical cyclone section. They need to follow the products they produce, and the key ones I always look at are the cone of uncertainty and the extent of the wind field.
And Dennis,
I
just want to make the point now. We all know that across the state there are many homes that are very old and single wall construction. And if you were to follow some of the guidelines on the table in your book, that would send a lot of people to shelters, and those shelters would be inundated. But you mentioned go to a family's house or a friend's house if you think you're in a situation where it's unsafe and you can get there.
Yes. Well, two things. It would recommend that people go to a shelter if their house is not strong enough. But for a tropical storm wind, like Lane is right now, what's projected to be on Oahu, they should try and probably stay shelter in place. But if they need to monitor conditions, because if it looks like there's going to be a hurricane hit, the single wall houses will be, especially single wall houses which are in poor condition, they will be subject to a lot of damage. It will be hard to shelter in place for those.
Okay. Yeah. And Francine, if we can get you in this conversation, okay. I know you also can provide another viewpoint. You live in a high rise.
Yes.
And you represent a broad cross-section of the disabled community across the state. So what are you seeing?
Well, first of all, everything that applies to the population in general applies to people with disabilities, because all of the advanced preparations that need to be made, regardless of where you live, are going to apply equally to an individual that has some type of mobility disability, communication disability, cognitive disability. The fact of the matter is that there's some extra issues that many people have to face, and we've been working with the community over a number of years, actually, to emphasize the additional amount of pre-planning and preparedness that an individual needs to undertake, perhaps over and above anybody else, because individuals are going to have responsibilities for maybe medications, personal care assistance that they need, and additional medical services, including perhaps dialysis and other type of treatments that don't discontinue during a hurricane.
Right, and one thing I know that we were hearing this week is folks that were living in high rises were getting notices from their associations that they were going to turn off the elevator service in advance of the storm because they didn't want people to get stuck in the elevators.
Yes, and we did hear that. We have encouraged condominiums to, first of all, not do that because people in most high rises, there should be a plan in place to identify where individuals are that have a need for emergency evacuation, because the fire department, under quote-unquote normal conditions, should be aware where are people who are wheelchair users, who can't get down the stairs, whatever. I'm in a building with 35 stories, and clearly, people are not going to be able to get up and down if they have a mobility disability. And we do have people very high up in my building. And I was in, I don't remember how many years ago, but I have been in the buildings where the elevator here was inoperable due to a storm. So the thing to remember is that people with disabilities already take a risk, a known risk, by living in a condo on an upper floor. So they know the risk, and they have to work with the association to identify where they are, to let a fire department know, even for a non-hurricane situation like a fire. So we have encouraged the associations to inform, advise people not to use the elevator as much as possible, to stay in place, do the same kind of preparations that everybody else has, but to be extremely aware that the electricity may go out, and that they are to strongly be encouraged not to use the elevator. But it is a risk, but it is also a risk that people take every day of their life by choosing to live in a high rise.
I did talk to a property manager who had said that there are some buildings with elevators with generator power, and that some have special battery systems that will then bring the elevators down to the first floor and open the door so that, you know, nobody gets trapped, that somebody will be able to get out.
Yes, you may not be able to get back into your apartment, but you may not be able to be trapped.
We do have a caller on the line. I believe Randy Nishii. Can you hear us? Are you there?
Yes, I can. Yes.
What would you like to add to this conversation?
Yeah, first of all, I wanted to really thank Mufti, Francine, and Dennis for all they do in terms of preparing for the hurricane. But I did want to, you know, bring up a point that I think is so important when we do have a hurricane situation and tropical storm. I did want to discuss the importance of preparing a home inventory form in the event of a loss. Because whether it's a paper inventory form that's completed or just taking digital photos or having taking a video on your smartphone, having something is going to be really important after the loss, when a claim is made and there's going to be an ask for documentation on what you had and what was missing. The unfortunate part is, if we go by just memory and just what did I think I had this, I think I had that, you're going to forget a lot of items that you have accumulated over the years. But having something in terms of an inventory form, that'll be great. Going back to your smartphone, looking at a video and all the photos, at least that will jog your memory as to what you had. So a lot of those items that are important to you that were lost can be replaced.
And we should point out, Randy, you're a State Farm agent, correct?
Yes, I'm a State Farm agent, and it's so important to prepare for all these disasters. And, I mean, we don't want them to happen, but disasters do happen, thefts happen, fires happen, and having an inventory form is going to be great so that you don't lose those items forever. Those items can be replaced, and they won't be forgotten.
Very good point. Thank you very much for calling in. Important things to consider, because like we saw with what happened on Maui, folks had to evacuate because of a fire, not because of a flooded situation or because of high winds. So you just never know what's going to happen and never know when you're going to have to just, you know, go out the door because your life's in danger. If you are just joining the conversation, we're talking about coping with the effects of the hurricane, and we'd like to know your story and how to be better prepared next time. You can join the discussion by calling 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. And Mufi, can we go back to you? I mean, you've seen a good cross-section of what the city deals with, whether it's the handicapped population or the firefighters going out and doing their jobs and you know, rescuing folks from flooded conditions or what. Anything else you want to share at this point?
Well, I think it's very important, and I want to thank Dennis and Francine for bringing up some excellent points. You know, the first responders that we have in the city, you know, they're well-trained. They know what their responsibilities are, and also having the courage and the fortitude to carry out their assignments. But we also need to follow instructions. We need to do a better job as a community, whether you are a resident or a visitor. And, you know, prep beforehand as opposed to doing it in a time of crisis. And so I think what was just mentioned by our caller, Randy, I believe it's his name,
mm-hmm.
You know, is very important, because I think that's applicable and appropriate for all of us to make sure that, and especially, you know, having the capabilities of a smartphone, which was not utilized when I was mayor 10 years ago, is very, very important to, you know, basically take inventory of all your possessions and the like. But I think what it just really comes down to is, you know, when you're a first responder at any county, you have to be prepared for all times what I call natural or man-made disasters. And that's what they're trained for, and that's why we have to ensure that they're always up to speed with the latest technology. They have the equipment, and not spare anything in terms of what we need to do to set aside the public dollars to ensure that our first responders are some of the best in the nation. I'm very, very confident that they will rise to the occasion here. So just be prepared for any and all circumstances coming. And a lot of these times there's going to be snap decisions that have to be made on the spot. And so we as residents can assist in that regard by minimizing the dangers or risks that our first responders have to encounter by following appropriate directions and then using good old common sense. I'm still astounded. As desolate as Waikiki looked this morning, I still saw people venturing out into the waters. You know, and it says, you know, you talk about tuning into the radio television, and everything that we have to say about public safety. We've had no lifeguards there for 2 days, and people are still taking a chance of going into the waters, which makes it that much more riskier for a first responder if, in fact, a surge should occur and that person should be in harm's way.
We do have a caller on the line, Christine from Kailua. You want to share an experience?
Hello, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. So I totally respect what your current guest is saying about the need for people to follow directions and to really make sure they're getting the correct information. I'd also like to just share, as a member of the public, that it has been frustrating to get misinformation and misinformation from public officials. And so I checked out the local evacuation center for my area yesterday, which is Castle High School, and I and others really walked away from there after assessing whether or not it would be an option with some serious concerns. We were being told it wasn't a pet-friendly shelter when it is supposed to be. They had 8 cots. People working there were arguing amongst themselves. So I just want to put it out there that please, people who are in charge, please get the correct information to the public. Please be prepared, because that was very concerning, what we saw yesterday at one of the shelters.
So based on what you saw, did you decide not to stay at the shelter then?
It's still my backup plan, but it was very frustrating. I don't feel that people were being treated with dignity. I don't feel that they were prepared to give the correct information. I don't feel that the Red Cross volunteers were properly vetted and even took half an hour to review the information before opening. To be told by one of the Red Cross volunteers that it's not a pet-friendly shelter when it absolutely is was really frustrating. To learn that they had 8 cots was really frustrating. So I'm prepared. I've got my own little fold-out mattress. That'll still be my backup plan. But, I mean, we can talk about people in the public following directions, and I agree with that. But these shelters need to be prepared.
All right. Thank you, Christine.
Thanks
for sharing that story. Interesting point. You know, the government does try and do what it can to provide for the folks who need shelter, and we just hope that everybody's on the same page to be able to try and kind of calm frayed nerves during a time of crisis.
Francine? You know, sometimes, if I could just interject, this is Movie.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I wish some of our public officials in charge of these things would spend less time on the camera and more time really sitting down with staff to make sure that they're following through, because Christine is exactly right. Nothing more disillusioning to be out there on camera saying, go to these emergency shelters, or you're being distributed in the media, and then when they go there, they're not getting the coordination or proper information that was disseminated about it is not occurring. So that's a good reminder, Christine. Thanks for bringing that up. And certainly I will let the county know of your experience that occurred there. If we're going to say the emergency shelters are open and they're taking people to the emergency shelters, that's what they're doing now. They're providing free bus service for people that want to go to the shelters. Then when they get there, they have to make sure that they're going to be properly treated, and also, most importantly, what they say is going to be available for them. In fact, it's going to occur.
And Francine, I just want to follow up with you, because I know there was a conference this month talking about what failed during the, I think, missile crisis, and how the cross-section of our disabled community maybe didn't get, you know, the right word and all the information they needed to get. So what was the takeaway from that and our experience now?
Well, first of all, yes, as it happened, we had the FEMA Disability Integration Specialist for our region here earlier this week to conduct a series of roundtable discussions on to glean information as to what didn't work for the disability population and how we would be able to improve going forward. This, of course, was planned a long time ago before Hurricane Lane. We also had two sign language interpreters from FEMA here to work with the sign language interpreters, ASL interpreters, on interpreting for an emergency. And that was just done last Saturday as a joint effort of our office and FEMA. So I want to give a shout out to FEMA. And in particular, I would like to make a definite positive note that the amount of ASL interpreting and captioning that's been on the news has been phenomenally positive and way better than this was a huge issue back in January where people were not able to get information if they were deaf or hard of hearing. You know, I've been doing a lot of this for a number of years, and it goes back 10 or 15 years when we pulled together an interagency work group after Hurricane Katrina, and we have made a great deal of progress since then, and I would like to really commend some people behind the scenes, case managers at the Department of Health who have hundreds of individuals on their client caseload. We're working diligently to prepare people, let them know what needs to be done, ensure that they have their emergency kits in place and if they could stay in place. Every facility that is licensed by the Department of Health, in theory, has a emergency evacuation plan. Long-term care facilities like domiciliary homes for people who are developmentally disabled, they all were contacted. They all were put. They all put their plans into place a number of days ago, and this did not happen before. And I want to make sure that every single case manager that has a client caseload in both DOH and DHS is acknowledged for having to the advanced planning. And so, but one thing we do know is that not everybody is case managed by the Department of Health or Human Services, and elderly people are encouraged to age in place. So reaching out to that population is a little bit more difficult, but there's been a tremendous amount of effort to let people know what they can expect at a shelter, what they can bring, and to make sure they have their medications prepared.
Well, thank you for that, because I think that's a very important point. Give credit where credit is due, and if there's a problem somewhere, whether it's a shelter or some other aspect in our system, then it should be called out, and we should see what we can do to improve going forward.
And we had a staff person doing a 12-hour shift at the Department of Health simply to respond to disability-related inquiries. And, you know, these are some issues that were brought to light over previous storms, and the acknowledgement that there are some unique issues for people with disabilities has risen to the surface.
And Dennis, I do want to point out that I think when you and I have done stories in the past, we've done things to go over like a checklist of what folks need to do to, you know, protect themselves and to prepare for a storm. I know we're in the midst of this. It's too late for people to run out and do anything right now. But, you know, once we get past this storm, very important, I think, for folks to, I think, really take a look at this handbook because it's really very useful.
Right. Okay, well, yes, I just wanted to mention the just Google University of Hawaii Sea Grant College Program, and you go to the front page, and there'll be the homeowner's handbook right there, and you could go to that page, and there at that page, you could download the homeowner's handbook. You could also download the shelter-in-place table. One thing I recommend that everyone always prepare, you know, and even the media, you know, I get called all the time 2 or 3 days before the event is coming in, but really the best time to get the message is, you know, when two or 3 months before hurricane season, or when the NOAA National Weather Service makes their annual announcement in late May, because a lot of these things, there's a lot of things people can do to strengthen their house, and they're not that hard to do. But you can't do it like a day or two before the event. And the last thing I want to mention too, if I can, is really important to be prepared, because the more prepared you are, the more you can help others, like your neighbors. Your neighbor is typically going to be your first responder, and also, especially for people who need help, like the disabled or the elderly, the volunteers that help those people need to be prepared. So I know myself, I'm a little over the top sometimes about preparation, but just for this event, I was able to give one of our neighbors some pre-cut plywood, and two other houses, we gave them water containers so they could store water. But your neighbors are going to be really important. So, you know, get to know your neighbors. They're going to be your first responders. Prepare and help them prepare, and you'll be in good shape, I think.
All right, and Dennis, yeah. You know, I saw that table for sheltering in place, and my eyes just popped out of my head. And, Mufi, it's a good table. You should take a look, because I think you live in a wooden house like I do. It's amazing. It really kind of sets up kind of where your house is and what to do based on the right. You know, category of the storm. It's a real eye-opener.
Yeah. Take a look. I hope the readers can take a look at it and help them guide their decisions for Lane, but also help them prepare for the future. Yeah. Oh, can I mention one last thing?
Sure.
We're also in an El Nino watch now, which means that it's not definite, but there's like a 70% chance that an El Nino will develop in the next 6 months.
And what does that mean? Tell our listeners what that means.
Okay, it means that there's abnormally warm water. When there's an El Nino, there's abnormally warm waters in the eastern Pacific where a lot of the tropical cyclones form. So the last time there was an El Nino was in 2015, and we had 16 tropical cyclones that all fortunately missed Hawaii. And Aniki and Aniva and Eva in 82 and 92, they hit Kauai. They were generated during El Nino years. So we really got to keep our guard up, and everyone needs to prepare. It doesn't take a lot of time. It's just, making small little decisions over a year or many years, and you could really make your house a lot stronger.
So the bottom line is next year we might get more storms. And if we can get by Hurricane Lane, we still have, I think, the hurricane season lasts till November, so plenty of opportunity for more storms to come our way.
Yes, and actually, so hopefully Lane misses us, but it's a good reminder. It could be, I don't want to say, it's a good reminder, because a lot of people are have a lot of damage. There's a lot of flooding on Big Island and Maui, and there's a lot of suffering, but I always feel, because we do outreach for all the islands, and sometimes I feel like the least prepared are the people on Oahu, because maybe they're the most urbanized. I think that maybe has something to do that. But a lot of times we hear that one of the most common myths is that a hurricane cannot hit Oahu, because they think that it's going to only hit Kauai,
right.
Eva and Aniki. So hopefully Lane, the best outcome, I think, would be Lane misses us and people realize that, yes, these things can hit Oahu, so everyone needs to be prepared going
right.
forward.
Yeah, expect the unexpected. Thanks very much, Dennis. And any final words as we wind up here, Mufi or Francine?
Yeah, let me just interject right here. This is Mufi again. I think the best thing to come out of this is to recognize, as serious as this threat is, for all the things that we talk about, having a 14-day supply of the things that you would need if, in fact, you get hit by a major storm or hurricane, what have you, is don't start dipping into that supply. Put it in a safe place and then replenish it. And so forth, and keep all these things in mind, because you just said that we are in a hurricane season, and there are many more threats out there. So if we happen to dodge it, I'm not suggesting that, I think we got to stay vigilant all the way to the end, because we are you know, with a hurricane warning on Oahu. And I think the point that Dennis made is a lot of times, you know, there is a mentality that says, well, the neighbor islands, the rural areas are much more up to speed on these things because they deal with it a lot more than we do. But, you know, you just never know when it's going to occur. And as I said earlier, it's not just, you know, natural disasters. It could be a man-made disaster, which makes Oahu very vulnerable to those things there with the military presence that's here and the like and all those things there. So the false missile alert was a wake-up call in that regard. And I think this, with Lane and everybody sort of now being seeing something that was going to hit all the islands, at least that was the initial forecast, should really be what we keep as part of our MO in going forward.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Mufi Hanneman.
Catherine?
Yes, Francine?
Catherine, could I just make one real quick comment?
Yeah.
When Dennis talked about your neighbors being a support, I really would like to emphasize that we had a call from somebody who indicated that their normal care attendant probably would not be able to come to help them because the care attendant was going to be either unable to get there or dealing with their own family.
Right.
So it's important that people have real good connections with their neighbors for intermediate emergency care.
All right, Francine, I'm going to have to cut you off. We're running out of time. I'd like to thank you, Dennis Wong, and Mufi Hanneman for joining us on today's show. If your call didn't make it on the line, you can still call the TalkBack line. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow, or join us Monday, for more of the conversation.